everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR, the number one HR radio show. It's Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day, Monday through Friday, lunch Central Time, U.S. So we want to get to our guest because it's definitely one of my favorite folks. And I think just like a christening of a new ship, mystery guest, I think we should start off with you doing that first, and then we'll introduce you. How about that? So let's christen your debut on July. Are we in July? No, we're in August.
No.
August 2013. I'm telling you, I'm a mess today. It's amazing. So Doug, why don't you roll with it? Everybody, it's Doug Shaw. I know people want to know. So, Doug, welcome to Drive Through HR. I think get us started with the first inaugural ever christening of the ship.
Certainly will do, sir. And, yes, good day, America. This is London calling. And because it's 6 o'clock in the afternoon here and it's a Friday, I'm gonna open a can of beer live on Drive Through HR, especially for all you thirsty folk out there. Are you ready for this? I hope that came across loud and clear.
Well, he for everybody that didn't pick up on that, the subtlety, the nuances with non-visual, that was the opening of a adult beverage. So having a pint-ish. How about that?
Quite so.
So, well, lovely. You should. That's, I think most people drink. Actually, before, during, and after Drive Through HR to kind of work their way through the experience. So,
yep.
Good, you got ahead
of that. Good stuff.
So, well, Doug, if you would introduce yourself to all our wonderful listeners out there, and then we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind for you.
Okie doke. Well, thank you very much, Brian and Nisha. Hi, this is Doug Shaw, coming to you live from London, England today. In fact, if you'd have caught me tomorrow, I'd be on a plane on my way to Chicago because I'm really excited to be heading over to Illinois Sherm to be talking about some social media stuff and the importance of connections. I guess what's top of mind at the moment, really, for me, is the importance of collaboration, creativity, and communication for the world of HR, and how do we get our heads around what those things are and help people to do them better. Those are the kind of things that excite me and get me out of bed in the morning. And like I say, I'm really, really chuffed to be heading off to Chicago this weekend to be meeting up with some old friends and new. Just come back from a fantastic holiday in Cornwall. And, so life is good, work is good, it's great to be here, and I'm excited.
Well, and great introduction. Always, I always appreciate and enjoy your energy when both when we're around and then when we're having conversations, because I think it's, absolutely stellar. So what's kind of like the one thing, what's literally the one thing that today you woke up and said, man, I really want to talk about that. I want to provoke some thoughts for HR folks throughout the world that are listening today. Let's start with one thing that really is kind of consuming you currently, good, bad, and different.
Okay. Well, I'm in a good mood today, so let's go with good. I think that that'll be a fun place to start. That's not to say we won't go to bad or indifferent at some point in the next 25 minutes or so. But I think the thing that's on my mind really kind of pretty much every day really is recognizing the importance of connections and how can we help people to connect with one another more effectively, both within their own kind of professional disciplines, but I think equally importantly, into other areas as well. So how does this kind of connected world that we increasingly find ourselves in make sense to us from a work point of view and from a personal and family point of view as well? But particularly when I'm thinking about it from my professional capacity, it's all about trying to put HR people at the kind of cutting edge of a connected network rather than lagging behind. I'm not saying they do, but you know, again, from my experience, sometimes we meet great people who are right at the forefront of trying to build a better connected organisation and a better connected world, and sometimes we meet people who are kind of perhaps you know not quite up there. So they're the ones I'm really interested and excited to be talking to and encouraging to you know take a bold step out there into the big wide world and enjoy what you know the resources that are available and the fun that we can have together in terms of helping each other to make work better, I suppose, more purposeful.
So what's kind of your recommendation of working through just person, you know, kind of emotionally, spiritually, how whatever it takes, people to work through the fear of that first step, right? Because I basically aligned this with when I did skydiving for the first time this year in May, and there were definitely some elements of brief terror. Before the serenity, as the legs went out the plane, 13,000 feet, and so, but I my options at that point I felt were fairly limited because I wanted to do it, but at the end of the day, there was definitely a raw amount of emotional terror right there because I was 13,500 feet above with a really big dude strapped to my back and we were getting ready to jump out, so. But did it, and it was the most serenity I've ever had in my entire life after that. So that's kind of I think there's a lot of people that are just stopped, literally stopped intellectually, emotionally, with this process of kind of being disruptive and kind of trying to kind of break and redo kind of how HR interacts. I think people are really just frozen by fear. So what are thoughts on kind of getting through that, and how do you frame that up so you can potentially, you know, get rid of that?
Well, yeah, first of all, kudos to you. I thought I was brave when I went to the Eden Project in Cornwall, which is this fantastic environmental and sustainability initiative that's been created down in the southwest of England. It's a beautiful thing to behold. And they have this awesome zip wire ride that flies right over the whole project. So it runs for about a half a kilometer, and it's about the drop's about 100 meters. And my daughter Kira said, "Yeah, let's do the zip wire." So we all agreed to do it. And in that moment, before I stepped off the ramp, you know, I had that kind of moment of fear. And all of a sudden, I thought of a million reasons why I shouldn't be doing this. And then in the end, I just took that one small step. It didn't feel very small at the beginning, and then had a wild ride for what turned out not to be very long. It's amazing how fast you can cover 500 meters on a zip wire when you're panicking and flailing around. But I think the point for me, or the thing that excites me about these kind of things and helps me get over it, is thinking about that small step. So actually, when I stood on that zip wire and looked out over this Eden Project thing, which is a beautiful thing to behold, if I'd have thought too much about the 100-meter drop that was, you know, halfway along the ride, I may well not have done it, but I just looked at it as one tiny step, and I just convinced myself to take that small step. And I think too often in the world of work, we're kidding ourselves that we need to be looking for the next big thing. And actually, I think in a lot of ways, it's a lot more fun to be looking for the next small thing, for a number of reasons, really. One, because I think getting small pilot project ideas off the ground is often a heck of a lot easier than trying to convince the powers that be that we need to go, you know, we need to go full bore 100% on whatever this initiative or idea might be. And I think the other thing that's great about small projects is that you can afford to kind of adapt and maybe try and run several small ideas concurrently so that you can test and experiment and see which ones work and, you know, kind of do A-B testing and bring in variants and try and understand which ones are working and which ones aren't. And I think the other great thing about small is it's just not so scary. I mean, you know, I think if I walked out of the house today and I saw a herd of elephants thundering down the road about to crush me, then they're pretty big and I'd be pretty scared. If I walked out of the house today and saw half a dozen mice coming down the street towards me, I'd probably be a bit more chilled about it. So I think, you know, particularly when you're trying new things, wherever you can, just keep it small, And I think that's a really helpful way of just encouraging people to get on and get something done.
Well, and that's, you know, and again, that's just good context, and I just don't, and I'm just hopeful that at least one person will have a conversation about overcoming that fear of driving change and doing what they know needs to be spearheaded and started in organizations. Because that's, with me, the biggest thing is there are so many, and more than not, HR professionals are bright people. And I don't think it's a case that most people get surprised on what needs to be done. I just think it's that, it's just the fear of how do I approach it? How do I start it? What's the repercussions to me personally, to my team, to the people around me? I think that fear is the limiter, unfortunately. So, you know, hopefully one person will be like, you know what? It is. I don't want to do this. I don't like it. I don't like how it feels, and I want to change that. And I'm going to be a little more disruptive and go after some change. So,
well, and I think that's a really good point there. So go after it for sure, rather than wait for it to come after you. I think it's always a lot better to be trying to influence things and push things along than find yourself being kind of pushed along or swept along, if you like. I also think, I mean, you know, when I worked in a big corporate environment, I was a real advocate for experimentation. And you're right, you do see a lot of uncertainty and a lot of hesitance and a lot of fear. And I coined a phrase, which is, it's not mine, but it's certainly one I've used a lot since then, which was just proceed until apprehended. And I think there were two reasons for me using that kind of banner, if you like. One, it was to encourage people around me that it's okay to get on and do stuff. And to some extent, I wanted people to feel that while they were finding their way, I had their, you know, I'd cover their back, if you like. And I think it's in a way, the latter one is a bit of a shame. But I think if people know that there's other people around them, not checking up on them, but just checking in and supporting them, and they also know that, you know, we can go ahead and try this stuff. I mean, one of my clients, a guy who works in Thomson Reuters, you know, he one of his mantras is, you know, we tried a whole new bunch of new stuff today and nobody died. Now, I hope that always turns out to be the case and that he's not proved wrong one day. But I think it's a real shame that this kind of paralysis exists in so many workplaces. So actually having a small team of people that you can bounce these ideas off, keeping the ideas small, and just finding one or two people that say, no, I just want to go ahead and play around with this and try it. What do you think? You know, very often we sit and have good ideas and they just stay in our head. So talking with a few colleagues about it people like the word pilot for some reason, because I think it implies that it is an experiment and that it's something that we can learn from. So if that's a term that gets things kind of under the radar and gets things going to a certain extent in your place of work, then, hey, go ahead and try it.
Well, that's interesting, Doug. And I totally remember talking about change with one of our favorite friends, Heather Buzzing. So she highlighted about having this mixed feelings during this change while going through a change process and all. So as a leader or as a person who has to inspire their team members, how should he react to, you know, this kind of a mixed feelings if he gets during this process, and how that person can direct their team members to, you know, a positivity so that can all the energy can be inspired to that one single goal?
Wow. Well, my own personal approach to something like that is simply to acknowledge it. I think, I'm riddled with uncertainties and flaws and vulnerability. You know, I only have to think about the fact that, you know, I lost my dad unexpectedly at the beginning of last year, and I start to, you know, I can already feel myself kind of cracking, and that's a lifestyle kind of change, I know. But people equally get very attached to things that go on around them at work, and I think that the whole uncertainty piece is to be acknowledged. You know, I mean, I remember listening to Heather and thinking, wow, what a powerful way of putting it. And I think it's really important to to forge connections that have the kind of strength that can stand up, if you like, to that kind of scrutiny. I mean, we all know that that life's uncertain, whether it be personal life or professional life. I think we're really not doing justice to each other if we try to pretend that everything's always good all the time. You know, I think that's just a false situation. I really don't think it helps anybody. And I know some people are more comfortable kind of showing a slightly more vulnerable side of themselves than others. But I do really think that if you want to create strong, lasting, meaningful relationships in any walk of life, then I think you need to be willing to acknowledge that uncertainty, as Heather said, and more than acknowledge it, I think actually step into it and be, you know, just be as comfortable as you can be that that these things are going around you that you may not have total control over. In fact, I think that when it comes down to it, we actually control far, far much less in and around life than we like to think we do. And I think that part of the reason why we kind of put these shields up is because we believe that they're in some way some kind of sort of defensive mechanism to these kind of uncertainties that are going on around us. Whereas actually I think if we can find the courage to let them down, then what we realise is that actually we all feel that similar level of uncertainty, vulnerability, fear, whatever it is, but actually we can diminish it if we all acknowledge it amongst us and go forward together. So I think really it's about trying to just be more real with each other and not kind of, you know, there's no rule book that says you have to check your personality out when you when you get to the front desk. And my experience shows me that the best teams are those that are able to kind of confront and embrace that sort of uncertainty and just accept the fact that it's a part of the way they work, rather than try and create some sort of false construct where, you know, we're all rock stars all the time and we never play a bum note, and actually every painting we ever make is always picture perfect. You know, it's a very false and very unsatisfying situation. So I say yes to what Heather said and step into it and acknowledge it. And I think if you can lead with acknowledging that it's okay to feel like that, then create a pathway for other people to follow you and say, you know what, I want to be like that too. I want to embrace the uncertainty and accept that not everything is going to go right, but we should just do it anyway. That's what I do.
Well, to do it. Yeah. Well, you know, and to do it anyway, you know, I think it's one of those things that, that's why I think we should have more talent competitions, right? We're getting used to, it's like everything. If you practice being uncomfortable and you practice quit making the uncertain certain, like getting on stage and singing or acting, you know, improv or trying to do comedy or trying to put, you know, playing an instrument, that's like completely uncertain, right? Because you just, if that's not what, even the people that do it all the time, performers, I mean, and you're one of them, still have some anxiousness, right? Because they want to do the best they can. They don't know how the audience can respond. They don't know if their voice, you know, you just don't know. And I think that's what I've heard from performers that makes it such a interesting challenge, because the energy before they start always gets a little bit nervous. And when they push through, they feel good on the other side, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can relate to that. I mean, when I was in Louisiana early on this year, and your a good friend William Tinkup was also there, and he could see how nervous I was. In fact, of course, we were all there, weren't we? But I remember William coming up to me and just kind of, you know, saying to me, "Listen, Doug, if you ain't nervous, then you ain't doing it right." And I think little encouragements like that are really helpful. And you're absolutely right about the performance piece. I mean, I don't know if you were in the hall, but at the time, but Dwayne Lay and Robin Schooling very kindly ambushed me. And, you know, had me up on the stage singing to everybody on the Tuesday morning. Now, I had no idea that was coming. I mean, in that moment, I probably felt a bit like you did with the big guy strapped to your back 13,000 feet up. You know, I thought, well, I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm not going to let anybody down. But boy, I could have I could have probably happily punched Dwayne in the face right there and then. I'm only kidding, Dwayne. But, yeah, these things are, it's really interesting, actually, that these kind of different aspects of doing things are a different kind of fear. And, actually, they're a thing that you can try, you know, outside of work. I mean, I'm a little bit unusual insofar as I get my guitar out at conferences sometimes, and I'm hoping to do the same thing in Illinois next week too. But you can try these kind of things initially in the comfort of your own home, and also in a completely different environment. So, and I think you can relate those kind of fears and anticipations and fright and how you manage it and how you feel back into a workplace environment. So, I mean, I find increasingly I'm doing more and more work that involves an element of artistic input, not necessarily musical, but drawing and painting as well, because that's something that people inherently think they can't do, but actually most people can. We're not all going to be Picasso standard, but I'm always impressed by the level of achievement that people can come up with when they start putting pen to paper. I mean, I know Nisha's a great artist herself. You know, and I think it's really interesting trying to approach problem solving, for example, through an artistic lens. So trying to draw your way to an answer rather than write or think your way to an answer can be a really interesting and fun thing to do. But it can also feel a little bit difficult and a little bit uncomfortable as well. So I think you're right. It's about mixing up those kind of things and trying to find different ways to apply creative processes, if you like, to a more, you know, to a better outcome, I suppose.
Well, thanks, Doug, for telling me that. And, yeah, I totally agree with you. This is even if it is art or even if it is handling people or talking to people, everything is sort of a problem-solving aspect for us. So from an HR perspective, and to create or to develop that problem-solving attitude in the HR professional, per se, what do you recommend to those HR professionals to hone their skills in terms of handling the problem or having that problem-solving attitude?
Well, I think there's a number of things, really. So I think having a desire or a willingness, at least, to experiment. So I think one of the things that's really interesting is that, you know, a modern workplace typically desires, you know, creativity. And in one aspect, I think what creativity is for me is the ability to see more than one answer to a problem. And I think we do have a real challenge with that because typical education systems tend to drive convergent thinking outcomes rather than divergent thinking outcomes. So there's some really interesting research being done into how young kindergarten kids think divergently and how good they are at it, how many different answers to a problem they're able to come up with, and how as kids move through the school education system, they get progressively and rapidly worse at it. And then by the time you're kind of 25 or over, the number of people who are sort of genius level at divergent thinking is in very small single figure percentages, you know, 1 or 2%. Whereas in kindergarten, it's very often up in the high 90s. So I think that's a real challenge for workplaces today. How do we encourage a more divergent thinking process? And so I think because, you know, if HR is about anything, it's about people. And if people are our greatest asset, and we hear that very often, then I think that HR should be encouraging and practicing opportunities for people to experiment and think divergently by allowing them to and encouraging them to, you know, indulge in slightly more creative pursuits. I run developing a workshop that I'm going to be running with somebody in this country very shortly called I'm Not an Artist, and it's all about applying different artistic techniques to problem solving. And it requires a slight leap of faith and a leap of imagination for people, but it's all about showing people that there are lots of different ways that you can represent thoughts and ideas and maybe even the culture of your workplace other than just via a bunch of bullet points and policy documents and processes. There are much more interesting ways of getting people thinking differently and thinking laterally and thinking creatively in order that they can then apply that divergent thinking back to the kind of workplace scenario that they're looking to improve.
Great. And when we talk about, you know, the conflict management, do you see any kind of a differences based on the generation of the workforce? Let's just say we have millennials, we have baby boomers. So do you see any kind of differences when it comes to handling the conflicts at workplace?
Handling conflict?
Yeah.
Okay. Not really. I mean, I think I'm not.
Because as you said, I'm sorry, because just now, as you said, I'm so curious to know your studies as you have read about it in terms of problem solving very specifically. So I'm just curious to know when it comes to problem solving, conflict management is also a problem solving, right? So when it comes to that kind of attitude or conflicts happening at the workplace, what do you see the differences happening based on the generations? Do you see that baby boomers are a little good in terms of handling it, and when it comes to Gen Y or new generation, do you see it's a little tough, things are going crazy or some sort of?
Right, okay. Well, I am not aware of any generational observations. So I don't have any. To be perfectly honest with you, I mean, I think that conflict is a really interesting thing in the workplace. I think most people will go to great lengths to avoid it. Whereas actually, I think it can be a really important part of that kind of. I'm visualising a scientist now, sort of sitting here tipping little things into a test tube. You know, a little bit of experimentation, a little bit of creativity, a little bit of chaos, and a couple of drops of conflict for good measure. But I think most people. I don't think it matters what their age is. I think most people seek to avoid it. And actually, I think my experience shows me that, generally speaking, the more you avoid it, the worse the problem gets. So I think regardless of the generation, I think it's something that people need to get their heads around and be able to handle better. And I think a lot of that, the kind of typical hierarchical organisational relationships don't lend themselves, I don't think, anyway, to managing conflict very well. And I think more managers should be encouraging more peer-to-peer dialogue. And I think another thing that we should be looking at is trying to encourage perhaps more of a kind of coaching culture rather than a telling culture, because I think those kind of things, again, potentially lead to diluting some of the negative aspects of conflict whilst allowing the essential for want of a better term, respectful disagreement elements to survive and thrive. You know, it's really important to be able to disagree on stuff and be able to have your voice heard. And I think that too often we muddle that up with conflict and we try and brush it under the carpet. And I don't think that does anybody any good, regardless of what generation they're from, frankly.
Great. Well, we have about 1 minute left right now. So can you talk a little bit about your Louisiana Shrimp Conference is coming up. So what are you planning to talk? And I must say, it was great meeting you personally at Louisiana Shrimp Conference. You're about to talk at Illinois Shrimp, right? Illinois Shrimp Conference?
That's right. To me, that's all about. I'll be talking all about the importance of connections. So there'll be a little bit of talk about technology, but it'll mainly be the social elements. We'll mainly be thinking about the kind of cultural stuff and what we can learn from each other and why it's important to have a diverse network of connections. I'll be talking about the importance of conversations. I'll be getting people to, hopefully, we're going to be getting people to try their hand at drawing something. So I'm packing a whole bunch of pencils and paper and all that kind of stuff. There might be a bit of music involved, but it's really looking at connections from a number of different points of view, about thinking about transparency and about how HR can connect all the other bits of a business together. You know, if they're responsible for the people, then they should be helping to connect the people as best they can so that colleagues can enjoy a more purposeful day at work and in turn they can serve their customers better. So it's all about the importance of connections.
Well, thank you.
We done?
Well, thank you so much for joining with us, Doug. We have a little technological problem, I guess. So where can people connect with you?
My About Me page is up, so you can get me on at about.me/Doug Shaw. I'm Doug Shaw 1 on Twitter. The blog is Stop Doing Dumb Things to Customers. I mean, generally, if you Google Stop Doing Dumb Things, you'll find me fairly quickly. If I'm not there, I'll be probably hanging around in a bar somewhere.
Well, thank you so much for joining with us today, and hope you all are having a great Friday and have a great weekend.
Thanks ever so much, and I appreciate the Rush tune in the background very much indeed.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.